Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. I'm going to skip over any feedback or news or anything like that and just get straight to this book review. Bit of a strain, probably not going to be a normal book review here because the notes that I've got are a little bit more jumbled up than normal. But hey, just see how it goes. It's a bit of a strange reading process that I went through in this book. It's called Eiffelheim by Michael Flynn, and it is 492 pages long, as it mentions here, and it was published in, let me have a quick look, 2006, it seems to be first published here. And it was, I can't remember where I found the book. I think it was on some kind of, you know, paperback exchange bookshelf. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, I remember this. This was a Hugo Award nominee. And it says actually a Hugo Award finalist here, which normally means fuck all, really, because, you know, I mean, how many people need to nominate a book for it to become a Hugo Award nominated book? Probably not that many, probably a few hundred. And I'm sure actually more people listen to this podcast than go to like the Worldcon, I'm sure, anyway. So, you know, it's just a few people thought it was a good book, and so I thought, oh well, I'll give it a go anyway, see what it is. And anyway, this is a good thing about goodreads.com, because I've been using goodreads.com for about what, 2 years now or something like that. I couldn't remember when I first started it. I thought, well, it was about this time last year, it was like January last year or something. And then I looked on the page on goodreads.com and it says page 46. I got to page 46 on the 20th of August 2009, and then I read a bit more throughout the end of August, and then it seems like I only got 150 pages into it, and then obviously I just must have gone on to different books or something like that. I can't remember why. And and then back in on the 1st of the 5th, so May last year, I was up to page 162. I was like trying to get back into this, but I fell asleep almost immediately. This is a good thing, though, as I was trying to sort out jet lag. That's what I wrote back in May of last year. And then last November, my update, I got to page 200 and it says, after a 10-month break, I'm picking up this book again in an attempt to finish some of the started but not finished pile next to my bed. And then the next update is, this is a great book to fall asleep at night to. I guess it must have been late or something like that. And then so that was it. That was in and then I was going right, trying to get back into this book, and then someone goes, I thought I would get it finished before my trip away in December, but I didn't manage to get it finished. I still had like another 100 pages to go at the end. And then when I got home the other week, like a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I couldn't find the book anyway. So it took me about another two weeks to find the book, because the subletter, who is in my apartment over the winter, managed to, they put it in a box somewhere and put it away as they sort of cleared up some of my mess that I'd left for them. And then I found it and I finished the book, and I actually quite enjoyed it once I got to the end of it in some ways. But then there was other parts of it which I really didn't enjoy at all. So let me go back to my notes here and see how I wanted to start off this. So the blurb on the back of the book goes like this. It is a time of wonders in the shadow of the plague. Centuries ago, one small town in Germany disappeared and was never resettled. Tom, a historian, and his theoretical physicist girlfriend, Sharon, become interested. By all logic, the town should have survived. What's so special about Eiffelheim? Dum 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 dum. And then it goes, Father Dietrich is the village priest of Eiffelheim in the year 1348, when the Black Death is gathering strength. To his astonishment, Dietrich it makes first contact between humanity and an alien race from a distant star when the ship crashes in the nearby forest. So yeah, that's the pretty much the setup of the book there. And to be honest, what we have here is a blurb full of spoilers, really, because it's sort of like, what's so special about Eiffelheim? And then immediately afterwards, we find out what's so special about Eiffelheim is that it's a place of first contact between an alien race that crash landed their ship nearby, and, you know, the Black Death is coming, the plague is coming along. So pretty much the back of the book sets up a question, what's so special about Eiffelheim? And then the back of the book replies and tells us what the back of, you know, what the back of the book has just questioned us about. So it's a very strange thing. We got two parts of this story. The first part, I might as well just talk about the now part. It's set in the modern day. I think this is the thing that opens the book in the first chapter. I think it is, anyway. So, yeah, it goes. Oh, right, yeah, actually, this is. That's funny, actually, because it's the first time I've looked at the very beginning of the book since, like, August 2 years ago. And one thing that I was going to mention here in the book is sort of answered in the first page of the book. But yeah, it starts off with a bit of, a bit of stuff in the past, but then it goes okay now, and we set off in this story, which is actually not a very good story. What we have is Tom, who is a historian, and he is a kind of historian who looks through data and tries to find patterns in data. And he has this little theory, which goes okay, if you make a network of all the little villages and all the settlements across medieval Europe or medieval times or even elsewhere, you can actually work out sort of like a mathematical principle behind this network of villages. And if you take away all big stretches where there's too much rocks or too many hills or all the different kind of geographical things that get in the way of people, you actually reduce the journeys between villages and settlements down to journey time rather than actual distance, it works out that the grid is almost perfect or something like that. He says, but there's this one place here, it's this little village or this one valley called Eiffelheim, and there's nobody settled there, and it was after the Black Plague, everyone died, but this happened in lots of villages in across Europe, and then they were resettled, but Eiffelheim wasn't resettled, and he's trying to work that out. And Tom is he's a historian, and I'd love to tell you more about Tom, but there's really nothing more I can tell you about Tom, because all he is a historian who does historian kind of stuff badly. He's a bad researcher, and so he gets a research assistant in who is a good researcher, but otherwise we don't know very much about Tom. Tom is in a relationship and lives with someone called Sharon, and Sharon is a very annoying theoretical physicist who sits around and thinks about stuff. And I know Sharon is very annoying because Tom is very annoyed with Sharon, and I know Tom is actually quite annoying as well because Sharon is continuously annoyed with Tom. And so there's two people in a relationship and they're very annoyed with each other and they don't actually seem to like each other very much, and there's all this kind of passive aggressive bullshit going on, and they're all like, oh, do this, oh, I'm going to ask you about your day, you ask me about my day, I asked you about your day but then you didn't ask me about my day, oh, I'm doing lots of stuff, oh, my work's really important to me, why don't you think my work is important to me, and it's just all this bickering between this couple. And so Sharon, she's this theoretical physicist, and she's all going on about this different kind of string theory, and the speed of light is a speed of light constant and stuff like that, and it's just constant dumps of science. Now I don't mind science dumps and info dumps about scientific principles or anything like that, or different technologies like, hey, yeah, just tell us about it. And I don't mind that. What I do mind, though, is somebody working on a theory just by sitting around and thinking hard about it. Now, I do know that people do come up with new theories just by sitting around thinking hard about it, but it's very tedious to read about someone sitting around thinking about a theory and then, you know that they're going to succeed. And when they do succeed, they sort of overthrow all of modern science and all of modern physics and all of theoretical physics and all practical physics, and everything to do with physics is overthrown and stuff like that. And that's, it's just because that they're going to be turned out right, and because we know that the reason that the village was abandoned in the first place is because the aliens turned up. So the whole thing that Sharon is trying to work out with breaking the speed of light, and is it a constant, and can you travel faster than light, is like, yeah, we know we can, because the aliens that we just read about in this other part of this novel, we know that they had a spaceship which transported them faster than the speed of light, and that spaceship is broken, when they crash there as well. And we also know that Tom is going to go through the motions and discover something we also know already. He's going to discover the reason why the village was abandoned and was never resettled. And we know what he's going to find out. He's going to discover that there was aliens visited there. And we know that he's going to discover this because that is his problem. Okay. And so we know Sharon is going to be right, and we know that Tom is going to work out, what happened as well. And we know that, Tom is going to be proved right in some way by what Sharon finds, and then we know that Sharon is going to be proved right about what Tom finds, and we know this is going to happen because that is the story that is being told. Obviously, that's the story that's being told right from the very beginning. So, as I was reading it, this storyline, this storyline set in the modern day, is actually only maybe like less than a quarter of the book. It's only a few chapters throughout the book where you were telling a story, but halfway through the book, every time that we hit one of these chapters, it would just take me out of the story completely, and I was just like, oh, fuck it, I'm not going to read it. So I just, every time I got to one of those chapters again, I just skipped it and stuck with the thing that I was enjoying, which was like the historical novel. And then when I actually finished the historical novel, I realized there was still actually quite a big chunk of the other story to go. There was like maybe 40 or 50 pages, and suddenly the now story at the end goes from page 458 through to page 470. Yes, there's like another 30 pages there. 25, 30 pages there at the end of the book in the now section. And I thought, well, that's, if it ends with the now section must be quite important. So what I did was that after I'd finished the historic part, I actually then went back and reread parts and then read all the way through the now section. And guess what? It turned out exactly as I planned. We had more annoying relationship stuff. And, you know, of course, Tom and Sharon, they don't only both, you know, work out and, you know, one of them has evidence for the other and the other one has evidence for the other. They actually have it at the same time. You know, Tom comes to Sharon and goes, oh, look, I've made this discovery, you know, and Sharon is like, oh, no, but it can't be right, you know, because if aliens were around, they'd have done. And then she gets something that she needs to do her theory and Tom gets, and it all happens at the same. It's just too neat. It's too tidy. If it was just a short story, it might work. So if it was just like, you know, a short story that you'd read in some magazine or something like that, and it's just the story about how two different people from two different scientific backgrounds can be unknowingly working on the same project, even if they're living together and they've got this relationship, and you think, okay, maybe the relationship trouble is that if they would have just been talking to each other more, they would have made better scientific progress, and it's all this kind of human fallibility and science kind of stuff like that. But along with the, you know, along with the hysterical section, it's just pathetic. It's just like, compared to the writing and compared to the drama that's taking place, you know, with aliens landing in a village and then the Black Plague sweeping across and all these different kind of things that you've got to put up with in medieval times, then you just get these two modern day scientists going, and everything is just too neat. Everything's just too, like, it's unbelievably bad, but also unbelievable in a way, because it's just shit. It's just really, really bad. And then at the end of the book, it goes, author's notes, and it goes, the model that Sharon develops for the multiverse was slapped together and given a coat of paint many years ago for the novella Eiffelheim, Analog Magazine, November 1986, from which the now portions of this book derive. And I was like, oh. So what we do actually have here is a short story which existed before this novel existed, which is telling this story. Now, if it was just that story, it wouldn't have been too bad, except that this story has already been spoiled by the historical parts of the book. And then it goes back the other way, which this part of the book also spoils the historical parts of the book, which I'll get onto there as well. Final note here as well. It doesn't only spoil the historical part of the book, it spoils it in, you know, tonally, going from the different kinds of languages to the different setting. You're going from like people sitting in a room talking at each other in some room in some place in this now thing as well. Nothing is described. Nobody really cares. You know, the characters don't care about where they are. The narrator doesn't care about where they're standing or what they're doing or what they're, you know, it's all just this person, blah, blah, relationship, blah, blah, blah. Tom doesn't like me anymore. Sharon's a real bitch, blah, 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 blah. That's all you get. And you don't get any of the, you know, descriptions of what the modern day world is like. And of course you don't, because we know that as people, you know, that's why it says now, and by saying now you go, I don't need to have everything described to me in like as it would have been in a historical novel. But it really does break it, and then, you know, it breaks up the historical stuff, but then the historical stuff by breaking this up means that it's really difficult to you get back to some more of the now stuff, and it's been 100 pages since the last time you've read a part of the now story, and you just go, really, we got to go back to this, you know. It's just a bit stranger as well. That's the now part of it as well. And then the historical part, I made a note here as well. I'm doing this in a slightly different way. Yeah, so the real problem that this historical part is actually really, really good, but it spoils the now chapters, and the now chapters spoil... I've said that already. Why am I doing this? Yeah, my note here is that why are these two stories told together? So let me talk a bit now about more the historical part. It's set in, like I say, 1348, and it's set in a village, and the village has got a church, and it's got a castle, and it's got a mill, and it's got a smithy, and there's some roads that go north and south, and there's some other roads that go east to west, and they lead to other villages and to other towns. And it's in the south of Germany, you know, Bavaria, just near Freiburg or something like that, Freiburg. And people come and go throughout this village and stuff like that, and it's got quite an interesting cast of characters. There's lots of people who just sort of sit around. It's like, oh, I'm the miller's wife, you know, and this person's, oh, I do this, and you got the lord in the castle and the commander of the armed forces of the castle and all these, you know, they've all got lots of German names. They're listed here in the front of the book, so let's just go through some of them. Yeah, we've got Gregor, Lorenz, Klaus, Volkmar, Felix, Maria, Heinrich, Herr Manfred von Hochwald. Yeah, the village that they were living in is actually called Eifelheim. It's called Oberhochwald. All these people live in there as well. So they're going about their village life, and they're all going, oh, the plague is coming. Oh, there's these other riots going on here. Oh, Jews are being persecuted and all this kind of thing. Father Dietrich is the main cast. He's definitely our hero in this story. And, he has a bit of a past as well. It's like hinted at throughout the book, what he's done, some stuff which he's not very proud of in the past. And he sort of settled down in this village to avoid attention from the rest of like the academic scene, because he used to study in Paris and he used to know a lot of the different priests and the different, you know, the different academics or whatever, and the different universities in these different courts and places around Europe and things like that. And he has got someone helping him out. There's brother Joachim, who is a Franciscan monk who is a spiritualist, and he's all going, yes, we should all be, you know, nobody should have any churches, we should all, you know, minister on the streets, and everyone should be poor like me, and everyone should do this. So you've got this sort of like different points of view of the Catholic Church being discussed then. And Father Dietrich, he's sort of servicing the needs of the village and stuff like that. And then one night, bum, 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 an explosion in the wood, a fire, and people head out to explore, and they discover this alien spacecraft along with the aliens. And the rest of the book tells the story of how the villagers, you know, get on with the aliens, and how the aliens, you know, get on with the villagers, and sometimes they want to help each other and sometimes they don't want to help each other, and the aliens are sort of crash landed and they want to, you know, fix their spaceship. And I don't really want to go much more into the story, because there is actually stuff that you can spoil, because it's not, you know, even though we pretty much we know right at the very beginning the reason why the village has been abandoned and nobody wants to go back there, or, you know, you can make a good guess at it and stuff like that. The story isn't very complex, but I found it quite interesting. You know, Dietrich gets to know his Hans, and, you know, one of the aliens are called the Krenken, but they all have names which you can't pronounce. So they take or are given by Dietrich more German names. So you've got Johann, Gottfried, Baron Grosswald, and Shepherd, and some others as well, and Arnold, Ulf, the different names of the aliens there as well. And they have lots of discussions about religion and science and cosmology and, you know, lots of more besides as well. Now, what the aspects that I really liked about this book, or really liked about the historic part of this book, is that it's obviously very well researched as well. There's a quote on the back: a deeply researched and well thought out novel that moves us and makes us smarter for just having read it. Orson Scott Card. It is very deeply researched, sometimes to a fault, I'd say, because it sometimes is like, oh, I now want to put, I want to talk about this aspect of theology. Oh, I want to talk about this aspect of, you know, 14th century political and scientific debate and how they're tied up to each other and things like that. And there's lots and lots of stuff about, you know, the way the church is set up and the religious rites and all this different kind of stuff. Now, it's good, because one of my favorite books of all time is The Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco. I think it's a very clever book, and it's got a lot of the same kind of things going on here. In that book, the main character is William Baskerville, and he plays the role of William of Ockham crossed with Sherlock Holmes, because he's like the guy who comes in and, you know, he has, you know, Ockham's razor at his disposal, and he's all like, yes, we're gonna, you know, discover this mystery, and he tries to discover the mystery, and it's lots of different layers. And actually, in this book, Eiffelheim, William of Ockham turns up at one point, which I thought was quite interesting. It's a little bit like, oh, now let's have William of Ockham turn up and we can have a different debate of it's the beginning of the modern understanding of science, you know, and you've got all these different things going on there. And yeah, and there's lots of other things that you can compare between the name of the rose. And it's not just the... Well, put it this way. There's a religious setting that there is, you know, like in Eiffelheim, every single day it's talked about, oh, yes, and it was the feast of this day, or it was the feast of this this saint, you know, and Dietrich did this in the church, and then he did that, and then he did this in the church, and then he did that, and then the church, he did this, and then he did this, you know, and so you get that same kind of thing in both The Name of the Rose and in this book. But, like I say, it's... oh, yeah, and also in one passage which I remember from The Name of the Rose is where he describes the door leading into the church, and everything's carved out of wood, and there's these, you know, these massive the wooden doors of the church and all these stone carvings around it. And you get the similar kind of thing in this book where they're talking about the carvings in the church, and the aliens are these sort of insectile things, and when they stay still, they look just like a carving. They look just like weird statues. So they hang around in the rafters of the church, pretending to be, you know, carvings of demons or carvings of weird beings, not beings, you know, animals or whatever it is, you know, mythical animals sitting around there as well. But it's not just that the setting there, it's also the setting as in the point of view of the telling of the story is through the eyes of Catholic Christianity and the sort of like medieval understanding of science and the natural sciences that they have back then. You know, they didn't have any kind of modern understanding of the scientific process or any knowledge about, you know, their cosmology was just as much about theology as it was about, you know, actual facts and observations in a way as well. And that's what makes this book really interesting to me, is that there's a different mindset here that we're getting, this medieval Christian Catholic mindset from Dietrich and the other people set there, and then contrasting that against the modern mindset, not of the modern day, but main sort of the alien. Now, there's another book that this reminds me of, and that is Calculating God by Robert J. Sawyer, which I reviewed last year, and it's so shit. It's unbelievable. Because there you get this alien and this human discussing science and religion, and you just think, oh, this is shit, because, you know, it's just in that book, it's just really, really stupid. For one, you can't have an intelligent discussion between a scientist a scientist alien and a religious human, or, you know, a religious alien and scientist human. It's because we know better. We know, you know, in 2011 or whenever the books are set in the modern time, we know that the religious arguments don't make sense when stated in the point of view or in the context or in the worldview of the scientific mindset and the rational mindset. I'm not saying that, you know, it doesn't make sense from within its own mindset. And that's what we have here as well, because in Eiffelheim, we get everything is told from the point of view of this Christian who understands. He's got a perfect understanding of the world. There are no mysteries in the world to him, because there doesn't need to be any mysteries, because God did it. And if God didn't do it, you know, Satan did it or something like that, or some angels, or, you know, it's just the way the world works. And when he looks into the sky and sees the stars, he's like, yeah, they're just, you know, it's just the pinpricks of the stars in the firmament. God put them there. And the aliens are like, well, wait, no, one second, you know. And it's really strange, because they're not understanding the science thing. And then Dietrich, he, from his point of view, he doesn't he's not trying to convince the aliens that he is right. He's just explaining his point of view, and then he is not discussing the aliens' point of view with them in a, you know, thinking that they might convince him or that he's got anything to learn from him. Everything that the alien says fits into his world view, which I find quite amazing, is that he goes, oh no, I'm a Christian, you know, as a Christian, and I know a little bit about science, you know, I've talked to William of Ockham, I understand what he's saying, and I know about logic and all this kind of stuff. And then when the alien says, oh yeah, well, there's this thing, and the aliens are trying to describe, you know, quantum physics or, you know, cosmology or just, you know, astronomy and all that kind of stuff from their point of view, using the terms or using the language of, you know, medieval German, you know, archaic German. And there's just not the words to describe it, but it doesn't really matter to Dietrich, because for him it's just one of the other mysteries of God which is out there, which isn't solvable. He can't be convinced that the aliens are right and his view of Christianity and his view of the world is wrong, because he's not willing, he's not, it's not even that he's not willing to be convinced, he's unconvincible or change his mindable, because that's not what it is. And like I say, this is I think a very strong way to have a discussion between science and religion and the soul and stuff like that, and exactly that everything that Calculating God and Robert J. Sawyer in Calculating God got wrong, they pretty much get it right in this book. Even if it does become a bit preachy and it does become a bit like, oh, now these two characters are going to sit down and have a conversation about this topic. I actually really enjoy it, because it's a very strange thing that Dietrich is, he's got this kind of weird non-curiosity about the aliens. And the only thing that he cares about with the aliens is if the aliens ever manage to say anything that he can't explain through his Christian, medieval Catholic kind of mindset that he's got and a view of the world, worldview. That's the only thing that he's worried about. And it turns out that the aliens never say anything that manages to convince him otherwise. Or maybe they do, maybe they don't. I'm just saying that I don't want to spoil it too much, because some things do happen which have some effect on all of the characters there as well. But I really like the examination of the religious dogma mindset from within that mindset, but within a science fiction kind of thing there as well. Other things that I really enjoy about the historical part of Eiffelheim is that there's good fun action as well, not too much as well, but there are some battles, you know, and there's fights, you know, the aliens are fighting and things like that. And it happens because the technology is so wondrous. It's almost of a fantasy, you know, these are like almost mythical beings that are fighting against the humans, and they see them almost as magical devices. Because that's another good thing as well. The level of science of technology of the aliens is very sort of like 21st century kind of human level technology, even though they do have flying harnesses that they can go in, but they have like computers that they carry around with them to interpret and translate between human languages and the Krenken languages as well. They have some weapons and things like that, and also they're trying to fix their spaceship Star Drive with medieval craftsmanship. At one point they're like, can you get us copper wire? We really need copper wire. We've got the copper, you just need to make it into wire, because we don't have the tools to do that. And the humans, the villagers, are like, what was going on with that stuff? And also the aliens are quite, in many ways they just look different from humans, and in some ways they are very human, which of course you've got to have that in a first contact novel like this. You've got to have some kind of parallels that the aliens and the humans can draw together, because otherwise it becomes the what's that book which is set on Mars and they've got this the alien which has just got nothing in common with any human mindset and things like that. It's a very strange thing, but there is something. So in some ways they are just humans dressed up in sort of like insect cricket, you know, grasshopper kind of bodies. But I also like the little details, like they go, okay, and we're going to dance, and the Krenken are like, yeah, we're going to dance, we're all going to dance in time, and they all look at each other and they all try to dance in time with each other, and no matter what they do, they end up just jumping up and down out of sync, because they just can't move together. That's not what they do. Their bodies aren't meant for moving. They, like I say, when they stand still, they just become, you know, when they stop, they just completely freeze, and they freeze so much that you almost can't see them. But then in the same way that their eye works on sort of like an insect kind of, in the same way as some kind of insect works, that when a human stops moving, then they can't see the human at all. And so when at one point there is actually some of the aliens fight each other, and it's so strange because the aliens can't see each other, because when they're stationary they can't be seen, and also they stay perfectly still. So it's this really weird slow motion battle scene that goes on when they're all trying to move, when they don't think that the other people can see them to shoot at them. I just quite like the different alien ideas that are brought through there as well. But then, at the same time, we've got this weird interaction between the villagers and the Krenken, and the Krenken are very interested in the medieval world, and that's what, you know, where all the all the research that Michael Flynn here has done into, you know, 14th century German villages and things like that, it really comes to the fore, is because this is, we're sort of almost exploring that village on behalf of the aliens, or, you know, alongside the aliens. But then, like I said, there's this weird disconnect between the villagers of Eiffelheim, of the small village, even though it's not called Eiffelheim when people are living there. That's a later name that gets given to it. But they don't really seem to care about the aliens too much. They're like, oh, they're demons. Oh, they're not demons. Oh, well, as long as they're not going to do us any harm. And that's what most of the people in the village think. There's some which are like, no, they're demons. They've got to stay out of here. And others which are like, yeah, well, you know, and some people make friends with them. But there's this utter disconnect of curiosity. I mean, they're very incurious about the aliens, and when someone does try and ask, well, where are you from, you know, and one of them goes, oh, we're from, you know, the star up there, and they're like, yeah, but what does that star mean, where is that star over, or when, you know, the whole thing of sort of, they go, oh, well, they must be from elsewhere, you know, in the world somewhere, they're just, you know, a different kind of, you know, a different race, obviously they're not human and stuff like that, but it's just strange how, like, the like you say, it's an exploration of the, you know, almost the religious, well, it's not just the religious, it's a cultural kind of darkness, or, you know, from the dark ages in that way, where there's the lack of curiosity there as well. And then you get the whole question as well, which is sort of answered in the now section. It's like, oh, why did nobody mention that there was aliens turned up? You know, there's, you know, why didn't nobody mention them? And there's that great, I can't remember what it was. It was this, it was a supernova. And in South America, they saw the supernova and they were marked it off in the calendars. And in China, they saw it and they marked it off in the calendars. And in India, they saw it and marked it off in the calendars. And then there's no record of it ever happening in medieval Europe. I can't remember the exact date of it, but this is obviously this massive supernova, which was visible for 2 years, and no astronomer or anyone in Europe made a note of it, because maybe they're just blind to it, that they were like, oh, something's changed in the heavens, that doesn't fit in with our way of thinking, we're just not going to make a record of it. And you sort of have the same similar kind of thing, it seems to be a similar kind of thing in this book, where aliens arrived, they obviously had an impact on the local area, but because they didn't fit the mindset of the medieval people and the people writing the histories or the people keeping records and stuff like that, they were just like, oh, it's just, you know, we never need to make it, and so then they just became demons in the tales, you know, these aliens who arrived for a while and stuff like that. So it's a very interesting take on history and what gets recorded in histories and what doesn't as well, even though that's also not just in the historic part, that's also in the interplay between the historic part and the now part as well. But there, lots of things that I really, really enjoyed about the oldie historic section set in 1348, or is it 1347 until 1348 or something, it's set over a few years. But oh yeah, also as well, of course, the Black Plague comes in, so that's a bit grim too, and there's lots of other stuff that happens there, which again, I don't want to spoil that part, I don't really mind spoiling the short story part, because it spoils itself. In fact, the entire book spoils itself. A little bit about the writing style, the between the two books is very, very different. The now part, like I said before, is very sparse, but it's a weird thing, like there's this sense of that everything that is happening to these characters, which is really important, like there's the disruption in their marriage, not even marriage, they're just living together, that's really important, and then the things that they're working on is just the most important thing in their lives, and it's all important inside their head. But then, like I said before, when you compare this to the writing style of the other side, it's not that important. Now, everything that Dietrich is doing, he's just going, yeah, I'm just getting on with life. It's not like there's an overarching kind of thing, or there is maybe in a religious sense, but it's like, yeah, we're just working on it. Oh yeah, the plague is coming, you know, we know lots of people are going to die, oh yeah, and this is happening, that's happening, but we're just getting on with it. Whereas like the writing style and just the way it's written, the now parts are very important. And then I just made a note of this at one point, I saw I in the narration, and this was like, I was like, what, who's I, is this a first person narrator, and I couldn't work it out. And then near the end of the book, what was it here as well, so yeah, and then it goes to, you go to the end of the book here, to the now section as well, and then it goes, oh yes, and suddenly Tom sent me an email and I did this, and then it's like, oh wait a second, it's told by the first person, and it's just this random person. I was like, well, who is this guy? And now I said, it's only now that I actually just looked back at the first part of the very beginning of the book, where it goes, I know where the path to the stars lies, And it goes, you see, Sharon was his physicist and Tom was a cleologist. I'm not sure what that word means. Cleologist is, I've never heard of it before, but I guess cleologist is what Tom is, which is sort of like this, this mathematical historian or something like that. Anyway, he goes, but I was into the affair last and least of all, and perhaps it would be best to let the story tell itself. So all the way, you get this little introduction saying, oh, here's the story, and now I'm going to tell the story. And it's only very at the end. He says, yeah, I'm the last person. So it's a bit weird that the narrator is this guy who we don't see throughout the entirety of the story until the very last chapter. And then he comes back in and then suddenly he's the narrator. And it's like the reporters at the end of King Kong. It's like, why do they get the final words? Why do they get the final lines in the whole movie? Why? Where were they throughout all of the action? Why were they important to the story? And why is it their story all of a sudden? Anyway, bringing that back to what I said last week. So that was a bit weird. The writing is really annoying in the now section and not very good. Like I said before as well, because the now section is spread out over so long, and also because I read this book over the course of, 18 months, I'd of course forgotten about the Anton character, who is the first person narrator for the now section. But like I say, that I can just completely forget that the very first page of the book is Anton going, oh, I'm going to tell this story. It's a bit strange. But if it hadn't been interrupted so much, not just by me taking breaks from the book and not reading it for a while, but also the historic part of the book is set in between the now parts of the book, I think it would have been stronger as a standalone short story. Also, one other thing that's very, very annoying is that Tom, as well as just being very annoying and Sharon being very annoying, Tom likes to use phrases he throws in French and Latin and German phrases in other languages as well into his conversations, and it's just left untranslated. Now, I do know a bit of German, so I can get by with that, but then the Latin and French phrases, I'm just like, oh, I recognize two words here. This is meant to be a joke or something like that, and I'm just not clever enough to get those jokes, and it just ends up very annoying. And I really, like, people who I chat with, I've never chatted out to anyone who's as annoying as Tom is in this book, mainly because he'll just suddenly start saying stuff in another language, and you're just like, that's really pretentious and, like, really annoying, but that's what they do. And then, then there's the historic side of the book as well, and there's lots of old terms and lots of archaic German in there as well, and different things like that. And actually, I think I'm, living in Germany and knowing a bit of German, I think I did probably pick up on quite a few of the clues in the books, or some little clever things in the book which they mentioned once. And I'm like, oh yeah, that word must mean this, or, I recognize a word and things like that. Like at one point in the book, they talk about, it was in the now section of the book. They say, oh yeah, they mentioned this guy, Johann von Stirner. And I'm like, oh, that means John from the stars, or John of the stars. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's obviously one of the aliens. And of course it is, because we've already met him before. But it's funny that I just picked up on that straight away. But then the historian guy in the book who knows German and all that kind of stuff just didn't pick up on that. But I mean, of course, because he's not expecting an alien. So someone from the stars for him is just a bit, it's just a strange thing to read. But again, it's sort of, sometimes I felt a little bit ahead, not just of where the reader was meant to be, but also, where the characters in the book are as well. I'm not sure as well. And then there's lots of other stuff as well that I like, lots of the religious language, and I mentioned before about that every day is a different saint's day, and it's actually it's well written in that way to sort of indicate time passing. Life was a lot slower there, and the calendar was different, and all these different things, and I actually quite like the way that time passing is portrayed. It's actually quite slow paced book. It's only nearer the end when the pace picks up a bit more in the historic section and things like that. But a lot of the writing is clunky in this book, despite, there's like religious lectures and then there's theology, and then, like I said before, there's all this different stuff explained in the terms that would have been available to them at the time. And it's sometimes a bit strange where someone will go, Hans the alien will go, oh, there's this scientific principle and it's based on this. And Dietrich, because he knows Greek and Latin, he just goes, oh yeah, the Greek word would be this and the Latin word would be this. And he's just named what we know, like, oh, what is this? It's this thing where you different acids get, and it's this thing, and it's the building block. And he was like, oh, that would be the protein block. So let's just call them proteins. And the alien's like, okay, we'll call them proteins. So sometimes it's a bit clunky, and then you just read it and goes clunk, 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 like as though, you know, just by knowing the words. But it's really strange because I'm not quite sure that's how all these scientific principles are actually named. Just the idea of the word scientist. There was actually a debate on what should scientists call themselves, because they were, you know, there were naturalists and all these different things. And then when science was actually becoming a thing, they were actually thinking, oh, we need a name for ourselves. We should be called, if we're going to do science, we should be called scientists. And lots of them were going, oh, it sounds a bit too much like atheist. Do we really want to sound like we're atheists, scientists, atheists? It's the same kind of thing. Whereas now scientist is just a word. And there's lots, I'm sure there's lots of other things which aren't just, they just, someone just goes, oh, what would the word for that be in Latin or Greek or something, and now it's called geology or something like that. I'm not sure. Anyway, so that was sometimes a bit clunky, but otherwise I thought it was quite well written, if sometimes overwritten, but it's pretty good. I don't think I need to talk too much about the thematic stuff in the book, because I think I've gone into that quite a bit as well. I'm just going to wrap up the review here as well. Might as well do it a bit shorter than normal. If I was just reading the historic part with the aliens and with the discussions and stuff, and it's got lots of stuff in that I want, this would be a 4-star book. And maybe if there'd been a little bit more of a stronger story, or the story hadn't been spoiled from the beginning. Oh, no. Okay, let me just say 4-star book. The now part, if I'd have read it just as a short story separate from this, it's not anything to do with Eiffelheim. It's just about two people doing science together, but apart, but then together. And there is this really, really overly cute twist, which is the kind of thing, which is one of the reasons why I don't read short science. I don't read a lot of short fiction, or I can't stand it. Well, a lot of them, you can't stand it, because it's all up to this one little play on words or this one joke. And I'm not saying like a joke as in a ha-ha joke, but like there'll be one thing that comes to pass and you go, okay, the person who wrote this book had one idea, or this wrote this short story had this one idea, and that's what we've done, and then we've paid off. And it's always so blatantly obvious, you know. Of course, sometimes it works well, like they go, oh, it's a, you know, to serve man. It's a cookbook. There's nothing in that book except, oh, there's nothing in that short story except for that one idea. And then that when that one idea is portrayed, then you might as well just stop reading. And you do have something very much like this, where, you know, one of the characters suddenly goes, oh, look at this. And you go, right. So that's what this entire story is about. All of this, you know, shit relationship stuff going on. And it's really annoying. But anyway, like I say, as a short story, maybe 2.5 stars, because it's all right. It's pretty average, you know, for a short story. Then you put them together and each of them spoils the other to such a degree that I've got to give this book 1 star. But then, like I say, because I didn't read it as a proper novel and I read it out of order and I read it over a long time, to be generous, I'm going to give it 2 stars, because actually there is a lot of stuff that I did enjoy in this. Like I say, the historic part, I actually think it's a pretty good historic novel, and it's a pretty good first contact novel, and it's a pretty good debate about science and religion and different mindsets, and it's a pretty good look at history as well. And there's lots of stuff going in there. But otherwise, it's highly disappointing. It's like a lesson in unrealized potential. It's like there's so... Oh, no, actually, in a way. No, it's not that. It's like Michael Flynn, he was like, oh, okay, this is a good idea. Oh, and this is a good idea. But he doesn't actually understand what makes a good book, you know? So he's got this... He's realized potential in the historical part, and he's realized potential in the modern day part, and then he's put them together and ruined it by over-egging the pudding. And you could look at it and, like Joey Tribbiani, go, oh, what's not to like? But, you know, sometimes different mixtures are not to like. Which is a bit strange, actually, because I just read... I had a look on Goodreads.com, and I think there was a review... I think it was on Goodreads.com. There was a review of this book, and it was... and they actually mention the shepherd's pie that they make in Friends, where they layer different things. They go, oh, okay, here's a layer, and the two pages of the cookbook were stuck together. So there's they're making shepherd's pie or trifle, I can't remember which it is. Then they mix up the trifle recipe. So there's ice cream, and then there's a layer of potato, and then there's a layer of fruit, and then there's a layer of meat and stuff like that. And they're just like, hey, what's not to like? You know, or Joey is like that, hey, what's not to like? You know, potato, good. Fruit, good. What's not to like? And that's what you get here. You get two books, which together would have been okay. Put them together. Like I say, they don't just spoil each other's, spoiler alert, plot point spoilers. They spoil each other tonally and spoil each other thematically and spoil each other, you know, just in so many different ways, just by breaking it up. So there we go. Shit book. Good book. Shit book. Put them together. Shitter book. Which is a real pity. Anyway, let me have a look on the Goodreads page, see what other people think about this. I can't find it. Here it is. So, marked it as to read. Quite a few people have marked it to read as well. Eric is currently reading it. His last update, though, was March the 16th, 2010, so maybe he'll... Oh, no. September the 3rd, 2010, he stopped reading this or stopped updating this book. John rated it 4 stars. Michael rated it 3 stars. I thought someone else put something here. Oh, no, I found it. No, it was on my review as well. Someone put a thing here as well. Paul said, 2 stars. I'm shocked. I really, really liked Ivalheim. It's one of the books I inflict on people when I want to demonstrate just how much science fiction is capable of. Yes, it is capable of lots of good stuff. And then I actually put my breakdown of it. 4 stars for the historic part, 2.5 stars for the now part. Put them together, 1 star. Me being generous is 2 stars. And then Sean said, strangely, that is exactly my review of the Doomsday book, which is, again, is a book that I started. Part of it set in the 14th century plague coming across Europe time, and part of it is set in the modern day. However, that was an audiobook and I couldn't easily skip over the modern day parts, which didn't interest me at all. Generally people, listeners to this podcast or my friends on Goodreads, have a higher opinion on it than me, but overall it's pretty good. I guess, what is it, 3.61 stars in total on goodreads.com, so it's probably a bit better than I'm saying, but really I really do recommend just read the book. Skip over all the now parts, and then later, if you're feeling up to it, just read the now parts, and you'll probably enjoy the book a whole lot more than you would otherwise. So that's the end of my review. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope you enjoyed this one, mate. It's been a bit more mixed up than normal, but hopefully you get my views of this one here. You can email me. Luke@juggler.net is the best way to get in contact with me by email. Don't bother trying to become my friend on Facebook, because I'd rather have emails back and forth. You can follow me on Twitter, though, which is @LukeBurridge, twitter.com/LukeBurridge. You can find me there. On goodreads.com, check it out there as well, goodreads.com/LukeBurridge. You can find me and become my friend and follow my reviews, and also then I can see what you think about these books as well. And also, what's the other one? Oh, yeah, go to Science Fiction Book Review Podcast website, sfbrp.com. You can see a list of every single episode that I've done, sorted in many different ways by, you know, time and by author and by rating and stuff. And also you can check out my blog, which is being updated quite slowly at the moment, but, you know, I'll be putting much more stuff over there in the coming weeks as I'm doing more stuff. And you can find that lukeburge.com/blog, or read my fiction that's there as well. Find the links on my website. The next book that I'm reading, I'm doing actually got Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny. I'm started that. And also the second book in the Gap series by Stephen R. Donaldson, but I can't remember what the second book is called there. But so one audiobook, one reedy book, like paper book, and I'll see which one comes up next. Probably in the next few days I'll be doing another thing. Oh, and also I'm sort of involved in trying to start up a science fiction science fiction/fantasy reading club here in Berlin. So tomorrow I'm going to go along to a reading group, but in real life, not on goodreads.com or anything like that, but actually with real people, which should be, well, hopefully it'll be quite interesting. That's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.